זאת חנוכה. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this is not your run-of-the-mill issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. The fact is, we are during Chanukah. The recording and first broadcast is not only on Chanukah, the sixth candle, actually the eve of the seventh candle, but we're also talking about Rosh Chodesh Tevet. This Shabbat we read Parshat Miketz, and a special maftir in the second Torah for Chanukah, specifically for the eighth day of Chanukah. It is not that common to have two Shabbat Chanukahs, Shabbatot Chanukah, if you will. We do this year. It's not exactly a rare occurrence. It's about an 18.5% frequency, not evenly distributed. Be that as it may, today, the moment I'm recording this, is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Lamed Kislev, the 30th day of Kislev, 5770. It is the first of 2 days of Rosh Chodesh Tevet. The interesting thing about the 30th of Kislev is that about 25% of the time, there is no 30th day of Kislev. Kislev is one of the variable months, and when the month needs to be shortened, the 30th of Kislev drops out. This year is a full month, a full year. We had a 30th day of Cheshvan, which is less common, and we do have a 30th day of Kislev. Tonight, and you might be listening to it to the show already when it is tonight, we light the seven candles, and it is the eve of the second day of Rosh Chodesh, which is the first day of Tevet. A comment about the sixth day of Chanukah, it is always Rosh Chodesh. The sixth day of Chanukah is always Rosh Chodesh Tevet. The seventh day sometimes is, and sometimes isn't. This year it is. I hope that's not too confusing. That's where we're holding, and on the secular calendar, a mundane December 17th in the year 2009. Last week was a Chanukah show recorded before Chanukah began. This is a Chanukah show on Chanukah. But we will, and therefore, we will read Psalm 121, which is our non-Tachanun day alternative to 130, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir lama'alot esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha Adonai tzilecha al yad yaminecha. Yomam ha'shemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha. Me'ata v'yad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'gula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. I was contemplating replacing 121, which replaces 130, with Psalm 30. Psalm 30 is the psalm designated for Chanukah. It is not said on Rosh Chodesh by those who follow what's known as Minhag Yerushalayim, based on the customs of the Vilna Gaon. But I do want to make a comment about the opening words. The psalm itself you could take a look at. I decided to keep 121 because it's a plea to God for help and an acknowledgement that our help comes from Him. And it's appropriate to say any time. Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid, a psalm of David, a song for the dedication of the house, capital H, referring to the Beit HaMikdash, which is attributed to King David, even though only his son Solomon was privileged to build it. Aromimcha Adonai ki delitani velo simachta oyevai li. I will exalt you, God, for you have lifted me up and not let my enemies rejoice over me. And the psalm continues. And as I said, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. I want to make a comment I heard from a fellow in my shul last Shabbat, attributed to the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, not the current one, his father, the previous Vizhnitzer Rebbe. The Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, the Hellenists, if you will, had chosen specific targets of Judaism and focused on banning them and preventing Jews from doing them. They are Brit Milah, circumcision, Shabbat, Chodesh, the whole concept of sanctifying the new moon and establishing the Jewish calendar based on the cycle of the moon, and the Beit HaMikdash, the temple. The opening words of the Psalm 30, designated for Chanukah, Mizmor Shir Chanukat Habayit LeDavid. Mizmor begins with the letter Mem for Milah, circumcision. Shir begins with a Shin for Shabbat. Chanukat begins with a Chet for Chodesh. And the following word is Habayit, referring to the Beit HaMikdash. So you have encapsulated in the opening four words of Psalm 30 the cause celebre of Chanukah and the restoration of Milah, Shabbat, Chodesh, and Beit HaMikdash, as well as Torah and everything else, as a result of the victory of the Hashmonaim and the miracles of Chanukah. What I would like to do now is play a song, a Chanukah song, not as an interlude, but as something that will summarize, or something that will follow my explanation of these words and the concepts that stand behind them. And this way, I don't know how far we'll go, but we should do a decent presentation for Chanukah. I refer to the Al HaNisim prayer, which is added to the daily Amidah. That means over the course this year of Shabbat, of Chanukah, you've got three times a day, just talking about the Amidah now, three times a day for the 8 days is 24 times. The first day was Shabbat, so we said it at Musaf also makes 25. Today, Rosh Chodesh, Musaf makes 26. Tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh, Musaf makes 27. And Shabbat, Musaf will make 28 times we say in prayer the Al HaNisim. And in Birkat HaMazon, depending on how many meals you've had and will have over the course of Chanukah, we say it once in each Birkat HaMazon, the after brachot for a meal. It's an important prayer. Al HaNisim v'al HaPurkan v'al HaGvurot v'al HaTeshuot v'al HaMilchamot sheasita l'avoteinu b'yamim ha'hem bazman hazeh. We thank you also, this is a parenthetical addition to these words, since these words, this prayer is not out of context, it's in the context of the bracha of modim, thanking and acknowledging God, and nodelecha, same thing in Birkat HaMazon. So the proper way to render it is, we thank you also for the miracles, the redemption, the mighty deeds, and the victories in battle, which you performed for our ancestors in those days at this time, meaning at this time of the year. That is the introductory sentence for the Al Hanisim, which then gets either Purim-specific on Purim, or Hanukkah-specific, beginning with Bimei Matityahu, Ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, in the days of Matityahu, son of Yochanan, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, the Hasmonean and his sons, the wicked Greek kingdom rose up against your people, Israel, to make them forget your Torah and to force them to transgress the statutes of your will. It continues and describes what basically can be summarized as the victory of the military sense of the Hashmonaim uprising against the Greek authority. And then, towards the end of the prayer, we say, Va'achar kein, and afterwards, after the victory, our army did not take a well-deserved vacation in some place sunny and beach and palm trees and drinks. But afterwards, after this long, hard-fought battle, V'achar kein ba'u vanecha lidvir beitecha, your children, God, came to the holy sanctuary, ufinu ateichalecha, and they cleaned up the sanctuary, the temple, v'tiharu at mikdashecha, and purified it, v'hidliku neirot b'chatzrot kodshecha, and they kindled flames, lamps, in your holy courtyard, v'kavu shmonat yemei Chanukah elu, and they established this eight-day festival of Chanukah, lehodot ulhalel l'shimcha hagadol, in order to acknowledge, thank, and praise to your great name. I spoke last week, I think, I remember, about the need for us to acknowledge and be thankful to God and to those among our people whom God uses, to bring about a Yeshua. We are not talking about the Exodus from Egypt experience, where perhaps the only time, or one of the only times, the people were not yet able to participate, too much of a slave mentality perhaps. They cried out to Moshe when they saw the pursuing Egyptian army, and God says to Moshe, tell these people to just stop screaming, stand by, and I will take care of everything. And he did. He split the sea and he drowned the Egyptians in it, and we were saved. But that's not the norm. The norm is a partnership between God and the people of Israel, and we each have our share of the task. Therefore, we each need to be acknowledged. That's part of a person's responsibility of recognizing the good that someone did him. And therefore, we say to God in prayer, thank you very much for the miracles you have performed and for the victories and putting the strong into the hands of the weak and the many into the hands of the few and the defiled into the hands of the pure and the wicked into the hands of the righteous. That does not take away the necessity to then say, these Hashmonaim, these Maccabees, did a phenomenal job of bringing about wonderful, wondrous victories. They worked together with God. You could say they were God's instrument. I prefer to say they were God's partners. And therefore, kol hakavod to God and kol hakavod to the Jewish army. Whether it's the Hashmonaim in those days or the Israel Defense Force in our days, those who fight in a Jewish army deserve credit and deserve our thanks and acknowledgement. I don't know if I could say no less than God does, but I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that. It is a terrible lack of gratitude to address one of the two parties that help you and ignore the other one. And this goes in both directions. Those people that jump up and down and say, Kol HaKavod Tzahal, the army is great, look at the victory that they have, need to spare some time to say Hallel to God, thanks to God, Hodu Lashem Ki Tov, Ki Li'olam Chasto, Tov Lahodot Lashem, it is good to acknowledge God, Ulizamer L'Shimcha Elyon, and to sing praise to His holy name. This one, there's plenty of room for gratitude. Read anybody's acknowledgement in a book, and you see that a female author will thank her publisher and her publicist and her husband and her children, and one does not take away from the other. First and foremost, in our prayers, we have Al Hanisim and we have Hallel. These are the ways we acknowledge and thank God for all that happened. We cannot leave it at that. We must be thankful to the people that sweated and bled and cried and risked their lives or gave their lives for the benefit of the people and for the sake of God.
Rabin Biyad, Tzmein Biyad, Rishon Biyad.
That was from an album produced by Galpaz called Chanukah Chagimu Moadim. Might be part of a set or a series of different holidays and festivals music. Hopefully you'll hear one, at least one, possibly two more tracks from this album by the end of the show. No promises. I also want to mention that I did not finish explaining the text of that piece. We will do that in a moment, following a break for station identification or whatever else Israel National Radio does between the two halves of the show, and we'll be right back. We're back with Torah Tidbits audio for Chanukah, coming up to Zot Chanukah. I just want to make a comment about the opening music of the second half of the show, last number of weeks. It's been the theme from the old TV show Bewitched. Someone wrote to me saying that he felt it was not an appropriate thing for a Torah program to highlight witchcraft. I don't know if he was serious or not, but assuming that he was, and assuming that there is some merit to the challenge, let me say the same thing I said when we had discussions here at the Israel Center about Harry Potter when it first came about. We actually had a debate. One woman who said that it's filled with idolatry and witchcraft, which is forbidden by the Torah, and our children shouldn't be reading it. And I basically took the pro-Harry Potter stand that any witchcraft that includes chocolate-covered frogs that jump out of your hand if you're not holding them well, or jelly beans that taste like earwax, is not the witchcraft that the Torah forbid. It's all fantasy. and fun, and I felt Bewitched was the same. Specifically, I would also suggest on a more serious note that if a person were to have certain powers beyond those of mortal men, to quote from another superhero, and that person uses those powers for good and does not contravene any of the red lines as to encroaching on God and his domain, I don't think there's a problem with it. The witchcraft that the Torah forbids is mainly an attempt to do abnormal things for negative purposes, and perhaps some positive things that we should not be doing. But when you're talking Bewitched, and you're talking a wrinkle of the nose which produces a vase of flowers on an end table to make it look more complete, I don't think that is the witchcraft that the Torah ever forbade. Back to the Al HaNisim. I mentioned before that the soldiers following their military victory did not go off on vacation. And I think it's a very significant thing that we describe them, the Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, as having gone into the temple, realizing without losing sight of the goals of the battles, that the purpose was to restore Jewish sovereignty to the land of Israel, to restore religious freedom for the Jews to be able to practice their Judaism the way it's supposed to be practiced, and the restoration of the functioning of the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. And therefore, right after, that's what they did. They went in order to clean up the Beit HaMikdash, to announce to the people that just as the service of the temple will be continuing now, so too the practice of mitzvot, the study of Torah, the keeping of Torah, shall not be hindered any more by oppressive, persecutive legislation, decrees, but that Jews are free to practice Judaism the way it's supposed to be. This ennobled the military victory. They go hand in hand. The military victory and the miracle of the oil, which symbolizes what the Hashmonaim attempted to do and what they did after the battle, is a very important partnership. I mentioned in the past, perhaps last week even, that the way the story goes, miracle of the pitcher of oil, a one-day supply lasting for 8 days, was totally unnecessary, whereas victory in battle was very significant and important and vital to the continuity of Jewish life. The miracle of the oil was totally unnecessary. And its greatness, its special quality, I believe, is exactly in its unnecessary status. Had it been necessary, then God would be fulfilling his promises to the patriarchs that he will keep an eye on us and keep us alive. That's the military victory. God must, by commitments that he has already made, so to speak, keep us alive. But to reward us with an unnecessary miracle, let's look again at the worst-case scenario. Worst-case scenario, if the Hashmonaim did not win their battles, I don't even want to talk about. We might not even be here to talk. But the worst-case scenario in the miracle of the oil, without it, you would have the following. The Hashmonaim came into the temple. It was in ruined. All of the supplies were defiled. They didn't have any fresh oil, kosher oil, acceptable oil for the purpose of lighting the menorah. It would take them 8 days to get new oil, so they'll wait 8 days in order to light the menorah. Whatever else they could do, they could do. If they needed time to produce garments for the Kohanim or incense to burn daily in the Beit HaMikdash, or animals for sacrifices, or whatever, they would have to wait. So you don't have oil. Hoi vey, what do you do without oil? What do you do without oil? You wait till you get oil. There's no big deal. They would not at all be culpable of any wrongdoing if they waited for oil to come. Fresh oil to be pressed, to be transported, or whatever. And God could have sat back, so to speak, and let it happen that way. That would be natural. What did the Chashmonaim do? They searched and searched and searched, and according to our history of Chanukah, they found a one-day supply of oil. So they probably said to themselves, all right, better than nothing. We'll do one day, and if we have to wait another week to get new oil, so we will. No big deal. So take one approach, of which there are many. They filled the oil lamps of the menorah, all seven of them, put in the wicks, or put in the wicks first and then filled the oil, and that was all they were expecting. So they were looking forward to one night of lighting of the menorah. Miracle happened, and it kept burning and burning and burning for a total of 8 days. That miracle was a total surprise to them, and a total unnecessary miracle, and therefore it reflects what I like to call God's smile and his stamp of approval on the Chashmonaim and what they did for the people. God could have been angry. Look at how you risked the lives of people. You should have just gone into hiding and performed your mitzvot there and leave things alone. No. How do we know that they were right for taking up arms and fighting? Not because of the military victory, but because of the miracle of the oil. I go back again. This is the lighting of the candles, but this is also part of Al Hanisim there. Va'achar kein ba'u v'necha l'dvir beitecha. What did your soldiers do, your children do, after this hard battle? They went to the Beit HaMikdash. It says something about them, and God wanted to acknowledge that, so to speak, and the miracle of the oil was the result. And our sages got very enthused about that, because it was a clear sign from God that we did the right thing. Now let me go one serious step further. It's a thought that I am sure occurs to other people as well. You can't miss it. You reflect on the Hanukkah story, and what you hear as an echo in history is the story of the modern state of Israel. You see, you know, there's almost a joking, half-serious, half-joking line that people said that would today's ultra-Orthodox, so to speak, community have approved of Chanukah and the Chashmonaim, or would they be ambivalent or negative about it, as they seem to be about some of the things that are happening today? Okay. It's a little bit facetious, and there's a major difference that a Sanhedrin guided the people in those days and does not, at this moment, guide us, but the spirit of halacha does, and the practice of halacha. In any event, I don't want to now focus on the differences. I'll let other people be defensive about that and discuss it. I'm looking at the similarities. A major similarity is the Hanukkah story did not end with, and they lived happily ever after. If a story ended and they lived happily ever after, that would be cause for a holiday. The story ended, or ends, or took a break with following the victory of the Chashmonaim and the establishment of the 8-day holiday of Chanukah, we were still subject to Greek rule. We were still facing many, many battles in the next many years. And when Rome took over from Greece, we went downhill from there, which led 200 years later, after the Hanukkah story, to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and an exile which we are still suffering from today. So what is the big fuss about Hanukkah? The answer is, we don't wait for, and they lived happily ever after, in order to thank God and appreciate God for his miracles. When we came out of Egypt, they didn't live happily ever after there either. They were freed from Egyptian bondage. They complained. There were problems. They wandered in the Midbar for 40 years. They had the sin of the golden calf. They had the sin of the spies. They had the rebellion of Korach and all various and sundry complaints. Yet it does not tarnish one bit our celebration of Pesach. Of course, you could answer, that's God's command, and we do what he tells us to do. But I'm talking now about a psychological, emotional reaction at an important point. We do not yet have a, and they lived happily ever after situation, yet. When the time comes, and the Mashiach comes, and Messianic era is with us, full blown, and the nations of the world are no longer antagonistic to Israel, and they do not pose a security danger to us, and Torah is being restored to the Jewish people and the Jewish people to the land of Israel, I am sure there will be a holiday, and that holiday will contain, and they lived happily ever after. But until then, it does not mean that we sit back and let history unfold and not react to it. We react with great sorrow to tragic events in Jewish history. We react with sincere joy at the partial successes. The Purim story is no different. It happened when we were subject to Persian rule, not even in the land of Israel. We were in exile in Babylonia. And we still celebrate because it was a great Yeshua, a great salvation from God. Now bring it to modern times. War of Independence, we'll talk about some other time. The Six-Day War, we could throw in there. A military victory of stunning proportions. I would imagine no less spectacular than the victory of the Hashmonaim against the Greeks. And we celebrate with Yom Yerushalayim and the saying of Hallel, and thanking and acknowledging God for his role in bringing about the reunification of Jerusalem under Jewish sovereignty and the return of parts of Eretz Yisrael, which were temporarily out of our hand. Great joy. How come there are Jews who don't see it that way? That is a tragedy of modern Jewish times. And it is something I believe to reflect on the Hanukkah story. And I don't believe that any differences that you want to bring up in argument, that anyone would want to bring up in argument, change the basic fact that we have a tremendous debt of gratitude to God and to the IDF and to the Jewish State of Israel for all that has unfolded in the last 60-plus years. I believe those that celebrate Yom HaAtzma'ut with the saying of Hallel and with a Su'udav Hodayah to God and Yom Yerushalayim in their various ways of observance, or people who, for certain reasons which I find lamentable, do not want to go along with the standard religious Zionist spin and flavor on what takes place, have their own ways of thanking God, that's fine. Those who wave their hand dismissively and say the state was established by a lot of non-religious people, some of whom were anti-religious, and all of the policies throughout the history of the state many times have been anti-religious. I say, you're talking the old half-full, half-empty glass. Look at the half-full of this glass, well, more than half-full. Look at the numbers of Jews who came back not only to the land of Israel, but to Judaism because of the existence of the State of Israel. Look at how much Torah is being learned in the State of Israel, more than any time in Jewish history, any place in the world. Look at the fact that Shabbat is our national day of rest. Yes, there are some companies that are open on Shabbat, and they're willing to hire non-Jewish workers in order to function and not have to hire Jews for that purpose, but that's not enough. You've got to protest on Shabbat, causing more Shabbat desecration than you're protesting, participating in the desecration yourself, and causing hundreds of other people, soldiers, policemen, etc., and media, to desecrate the Shabbat. That's warped. That's warped. The Chashmonaim, in the aftermath of Chanukah, for 100 years, till they died out, were fraught with problems. Kings that shouldn't have been kings, because they were not from the right lineage, who not only usurped the throne of Israel, but mistreated it and mistreated people and did all kinds of terrible things. And yet, Chanukah is still Chanukah. It is a holiday to celebrate, to thank God for, and we focus on the shining light of the Chanukah story without tainting it by giving the history of the Hasmonean dynasty that followed. You look at the victory in the Six-Day War. You look at the decimation of the Egyptian Air Force without one plane leaving the ground. No matter how many casualties there were, which are all lamentable, the death toll would have been unbelievably higher had it not been for the stunning victory of the Israel Defense Force in 6 days. That, by itself, don't tell me anything peripheral to that. That, by itself, is enough to say, Ze Hayom Asa Hashem, this day was made by God, Nagila V'Nismachavo, I will rejoice and celebrate that day. Am I suggesting that Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim, either or both, are like Chanukah? Not quite. Chanukah was established by a Sanhedrin. Chanukah was accompanied by the enactment of a new mitzvah, the lighting of Chanukah candles. We do not have that kind of authority today, and we don't abuse it. The saying of Hallel has guidelines. I believe those guidelines are adequately met, even more than adequately met, for the saying of Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim. There are people who argue against that. Not my point now to get into that argument. Did we make a new mitzvah? No. You don't call making a barbecue in the afternoon or strolling or going to new places in Israel. These are all practices that have become part of Yom Ha'atzmaut or Yom Yerushalayim, not on the level of a mitzvah. The saying of Hallel with a bracha, again I say, is definitely sanctioned by the guidelines for the reciting of Hallel. And I think it's a very important thing. And when I have said in the past that people who don't say Hallel are blind, I still believe that, even though I've been taken to task for using that terminology. And I did qualify it before by those who have a technical halachic issue with it, but choose a different way to acknowledge and thank God for these great things. Chanukah and Purim both showed the way. In the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, there were hundreds of other Chanukahs and Purims on the books. Chanukah and Purim survived the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We are now in the footsteps of Mashiach, in the beginning of the flowering of our redemption, in the beginning of the ingathering of the exiles, maybe not even the beginning, maybe the middle of it. We have a temple institute that is in full swing, as well as other institutions, in preparing for a third Beit HaMikdash. We have a lot of political problems, and we have a lot of basic belief problems on the part of many Jews. But I am giving it to you from what I would have to call the Dati Le'umi perspective, the religious Zionistic perspective, and say that we are definitely heading in the right direction. And I believe that even though God does not currently perform open miracles in our time, he certainly continues to perform a myriad of hidden miracles, the ones that are natural and the ones that are perceived by some as just nature, as well as ones that stretch the definition of natural, and remains in his role of behind the scenes supervision and control of the situation in which we are in. On that note, I wish you a Chanukah Sameach, Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, and Lehishtameah.